This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
And I'm Karma.
We do have Winston on the phone right now. Oh, we're going to be talking. He wrote this paper. And I've been talking about this paper for, what, 4 months? 4 or 5 months? And this paper about the arguments that skeptics use to brush off the paranormal. And I was just telling Winston during the break, I was telling him, I'm pretty well convinced because I saw a ghost once. And I don't know if anybody can tell me, a skeptic or not, it could even be a paranormal enthusiast, tell me, no, you didn't see a ghost. I just wouldn't believe it, you know.
You can't ignore something you've seen.
Right, because I saw it with my eyes, and I know that it was there, and I even stopped the car because I thought I was going to hit it, you know, and
how courteous of you.
I know. I didn't want to get in an accident.
You didn't want to kill him.
Yeah,
no.
I didn't want to kill the guy. That would really ruin his afterlife. But, you know, so, I mean, I'm convinced. I know for a fact that there's something, right? I can't even pretend to know what it is. But I know that there's something out there. I know that, you know, that happens. But then, at the same time, I have this part of me that, like, when psychics are talking to me, like we were talking before the break, that the psychics that are, you know, doing cold readings and stuff like that, or some are professed psychics, some probably are real. You know, like you said, you didn't give that guy any information, and he still came up with good stuff. And you got to figure, I wonder how much of it's cold reading, you know. So when I read Winston's paper about the arguments that skeptics use to brush off or belittle or, you know, deny the paranormal realm, I'm like, every single thing, I could see myself, you know, really in every single situation where people have said, you know, no, it's this, no, it's that. I've even in the chat rooms pulled out several arguments and whammied people with them, you know, several of what Winston says, you know, because people say, oh, well, you know, you can't see God, so you can't believe in him, you know, or whatever, and you know, you can't see air either, but it's there, you know, you can't see molecules, but they're there, so you can't see an atom without, you know, a lot of help with an electron microscope, so you can, you know, there are things that they didn't know about, science didn't know about, didn't recognize, that really are there, so there can be other things. So, Winston, are you there?
Yeah.
Let's talk about skeptics.
Okay.
How did you...
But since you talked about ghosts first, I just wanted to say that a few weeks ago we did a seance with some ghost hunters on an Indian reservation, and I too felt like I knew the ghosts were there, like I could sense their presence.
Did you... when?
And okay. Like someone's in the room, you know, but even though, you know, I was the only one who couldn't see or hear, you know, any of the ghosts, because I'm not usually attuned to those kind of things, so coming from me, it'd be more convincing because I don't have a history of seeing things, but I could sense that they were there. Like the best way to describe it is to say that the room is crowded, even though you don't see anyone there, but it feels like it's crowded.
I felt that.
The energy around you.
Yeah, it's a different energy. It's a different level.
Like you do in a crowded room, except there's no one physically there. You know. That kind of thing.
And did you get like physical?
Satan was real.
Did you get like physical feelings, like the hair on the back of your neck standing up, or
not so much? I could feel a little bit of the temperature drops and the breeze.
Mhm.
And the thing is, this was done in an airtight sealed room.
Wow.
With all the windows and doors completely tightly sealed, and including the ventilation above too. So the breeze was a bit interesting, and you could experience the temperature drops. We had this little gun with a laser pointer that registered the temperature.
Oh yes, we have that for our ghost hunting. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm not really experienced with that, so all of it was new to me. But yeah, I could feel the temperature drops and stuff, and I don't usually sense ghosts ever. You know, I don't have these experiences, but this time, you know, I could feel these sensations. And you know, I don't go around telling people that these were definitely real ghosts, because I don't know that. But what I do know is that the sensations were real, and therefore it's something to consider. You know, so I think a true skeptic should say, you know, they don't have to believe or disbelieve something like that, but it's something to consider, you know.
Well, that's actually one of the arguments in your paper is about just the sheer volume of reports of paranormal, not necessarily paranormal activity, but the sheer volume of belief systems in the world that believe in them, the sheer volume of also sighting reports and things like that, that if you took a single person and sat him down and listened to his story, like you said, oh, I went to the seance and it felt like there was a crowded room and there were temperature drops according to the instruments, and you listed all the anomalies, you know, all the anomalies. Somebody could convince you individually, maybe, that, okay, so it was a little freaky. You know, your mind could have played tricks on you, that kind of thing. You might be able to convince one person. But what about the multitude of people who have reported all of the, you know, these bizarre activities and these bizarre experiences and observations? Everything in the scientific community, everything's an observation, right?
Right.
You know, you observe a phenomena, or you observe something, and that's the beginning of the scientific method, is you make an observation, and then the next step is to form a hypothesis, and then, you know, test the hypothesis is the next step. So the very first thing is the observation, and there's been literally a huge number of observations of paranormal activity, either ghosts or, you know, even UFOs and vampires and werewolves and Bigfoots or feet, and you know, there's like the huge volume, but taking one story, you know, and sitting one person down, you know, perhaps you might be able to convince, I think you might be able to convince that one person, okay, so you were a little freaked out and your mind played tricks on you, but there's like so many other experiencers. Is that the first time you participated in something like that?
Not the very first time. I did something similar in Virginia City, Nevada, because it was a town with a history of hauntings, and I experienced similar things, but not quite as strongly as that night. So yeah, just to a lesser degree, I have. But you make a good point about the overwhelming anecdotal evidence for ghosts, because of all the paranormal phenomena, I'd probably say the highest proportion of people believe in ghosts, because if you take UFOs and Bigfoot, for instance, you know, like some people believe in that and some don't, and I'd probably say a minority of people believe in those kind of things. But with ghosts, I mean, it's so widespread reported, widely reported in you know, all around the world and all throughout history, that, you know, that apparently it seems like, you know, at least half the people in this world believe in it.
And not only that, from all different walks of life. I mean, we're talking, you know, ancient civilizations, modern civilizations, various religious, affiliations, and the cultures, different cultures have this. There's even like a ghost day or something in Indonesia. And, oh, and Mexican, people of Spanish descent, I believe, have... I don't think it's Cinco de Mayo. I think it must be their Halloween kind of thing. It's where they go to the cemetery and they clean up the grave of a loved one or of family members, and they actually set plates for them at their dinner table that day. You know, I think that a lot of it is beautiful, but it's so ingrained into a lot of culture, and people, skeptic folks, I guess, are sort of ignoring a lot of that or foo-fooing it.
Yeah, and they're ignoring it because, you know, they can't touch a ghost and they can't put it into a box, and that's kind of an oxymoron, because a ghost is not solid by definition. So they want solid, you know, hard proof of something that's not solid, and it's a bit of an oxymoron. And the other thing is that they use, you know, a philosophical argument to try to discredit them. All they do is use this one sentence, which is anecdotal evidence is invalid. That's sort of like a philosophical statement more than a scientific one or one based in reality, because you know what these skeptics are about is their skepticism is not about searching for the truth or learning new things or exploring new things. It's mostly about their like philosophy, which so most of their arguments are philosophically based, not really scientifically based. Because if you take that line they use, anecdotal evidence is invalid, for instance, and you apply it to a simple example. For example, 10 people I know in my town, if they tell me that they saw a man dressed in the mall, dressed as Santa Claus, taking photos with kids, for instance. If 10 people in my town told me that, chances are if I went to the mall and then looked for this Santa Claus, this guy dressed, you know, in a Santa Claus suit, not the real Santa Claus, chances are, I mean, he would be there, you know. So in that sense, I mean, the fact that 10 people or even 2 people telling me something like that would, you know, most likely check out to be true, I mean, that pretty much says that. I mean, anecdotal evidence points to something, and it's not worthless, like skeptics say, you know. It's just something to consider based on the circumstances. And so if the skeptic's philosophy, you know, doesn't even work with such a simple example as that, I mean, why should it, you know, work for other things, like ghosts, for instance, you know? That's pretty much the fault, you know, that I see in that.
Well, I definitely see that as well, because I mean, there's so many things that there's people in my life whom I trust, right? And I put a trust level on, like, my parents, you know. I trust them. I figure they're gonna, for the most part, tell me the truth. Same thing with a lot of my friends. Same thing with you know, even listeners of Ghostly Talk. If they write me this incredible story about how they saw a ghost or whatever, I'll pretty much trust it until I you know, have a reason to distrust it. So what happens is I guess it all based on, you know, the amount of trust that you have in their statements.
And yeah, that is a factor. I mean, if someone you know is credible and doesn't tend to make up things, I mean, you're going to trust that person more than some stranger you don't know. And that's the thing. I mean, with ghosts, I mean, everyone probably knows somebody who's seen a ghost, and everyone probably knows some credible people they know that have seen a ghost. So that's why it's probably, you know, next to God, one of the you know, spiritual things that most people believe in.
I work with a lady, and I just actually got to work next to her, and she said her mother had passed away about a year ago, and I kind of brought it up about the whole spiritual thing and talking about Ghostly Talk, what I do, and everything like that, and I go, I know you're going to think I'm a nutcase, but I don't care, okay? This is what I've seen, and this is what I've heard, and this is what I've witnessed. And she says, you know, if you would have been talking to me a year ago, I would have probably thought you were a nutcase. But I believe in ghosts now because my mother has came to me. So basically, if you don't believe, okay, and you shut your mind off to it, you're not going to see anything or you're not going to see that side. So obviously you're going to keep arguing about it or have an argument about it. And for her to say that was pretty unique, because she said, you know, I thought everybody was crazy and they, oh, I seen a ghost. Yeah, you're full of crap. But until it happened to her, now she's a believer and she sees more of it. So she's like constantly seeing things. And
well, and that's the thing though. Nobody can give skeptics that experience. They'd have to experience it for themselves. You know, like if a ghost suddenly visited James Randi and then he, you know, he says, oh, now I believe because
I'm
I saw
crazy.
A ghost.
Yeah. I mean, I thought everybody else was.
Right. And
just because it hasn't happened to them.
Right. I mean, but that's a huge part of your paper as well, Winston. There's something about that's a very closed-minded of them to believe that, or to, you know, to sit there and say, you know, this is not real because of all these different arguments, right? It's very closed-minded because skeptics will almost always say, I'm open-minded about it. Even James Randi, the, you know, he's the most celebrated skeptic, I guess. He's like, I'm so open-minded that I've issued this $1 million challenge, right, to prove it. But really, they're not open-minded about it.
No, not at all. And you can see that. I mean, there's that saying, actions speak louder than words. And if you look at the pattern of what they say and how they act and the way they argue, I mean, it's pretty obvious that they're not open-minded and trying to find out something or trying, because they aren't seekers of truth here, like we are, for instance. Their goal is to debunk and discredit, and just to find any way possible to discredit something, and they use tactics like spouting philosophical arguments, like anecdotal evidence is invalid, and raising the bar if someone finds something that supports it. They'll try to discredit that person in some way, or say, well, why didn't this work or that work? So it's kind of rationalizing, always finding, you know, a reason to discredit or not believe. And it's pretty obvious when you're dealing with them that those are the tactics they use. And so you can tell if a person's a closed-minded or a cynical person from the pattern of his arguments and the way he thinks. Because everyone will pretty much say, oh, I'm open-minded. Anyone will say that, and everyone will say they're honest, too, and everyone likes to think that they're an intellectual, but, you know, the way you can tell is from the pattern of tactics they use and arguments they use and how they think and reason.
And it's a little bit hypocritical as well. Because when they say, okay, well, I'm open-minded about it, and I'm really, really into science, and here's my list of arguments why your story is all bunk, right? And they don't tend to listen to the counter-argument sometimes, saying, well, you know, that's a philosophical argument. It does not erase the fact that I've given you this story.
They're too set on proving their point. They're not open-minded.
Right, and not proving.
They believe that it's not real. So if you, by how they argue, and how they always constantly try to find, like, some scientific whatever solution for it, why it's happening,
but that's
they're not.
That's the hypocritical part about it, though, because they're not trying to find a scientific reason for that not to exist. They're just arguing for the sake of argument's sake. I believe is that right, Winston? A lot of times they're like, why couldn't they? I've been reading this book called Parapsychology by Rene Soudre, and it describes back in the it starts with Mesmer. You know, that's going way back, 1700s and stuff, and the different. There were labs all over the world. There were conferences, the Utrecht conference. There's all these conferences about where very scientific minded people from universities and from private labs would get together and talk about their studies of the paranormal. And a lot of that was happening during the rage of spiritualism, you know, the Fox sisters and stuff like that. And these very scientific-minded people would come together and discuss what they've done to study telepathy, to study psychokinesis. He doesn't specifically mention anything about ghosts, but other than, you know, he thinks that there's some kind of poltergeist phenomena going on with real people causing ghostly activity. That's what it seems, you know, I'm not really into that chapter yet, but they, you know, there's all these scientific minded people who got together at conferences and discussed and took data, hard measurements, actual observations of scientifically minded people. They discussed it, they worked on it, they created reports, they checked each other's data. They would sometimes, you know, join together and do experiments. They did all kinds of stuff. Is that going on anymore? There's no more, like, actual, is there scientific, have you heard of anything, Winston, scientific exploration of the paranormal?
Well, there's some conferences and meetings with groups such as the American Psychic Society and several other small groups, but as far as large-scale mainstream scientists, I'm not really aware of that. It's mostly happening with smaller groups.
Right, and that's what it's become. Because I don't think it was like that, even as short as 50, 60 years ago, and for 100 years before that, it was not like that. There were actual scientists who would take these observations reported by people. I knew the moment that my, loved one was passing away, even though I was 2,000 miles away. You know, there's an observation, right? And they gathered them all up, they analyzed them, they sent out questionnaires, they did the statistics on these things.
So you're saying, Doug, that the people that are the critics or the cynics are not studying it scientifically?
And that's hypocritical. I don't think that they're doing it right now. They're not doing the scientific studies that they should be. If they were real skeptics, right? I mean, if they were, like, really arguing this does not exist, right? Why couldn't they run some, come up with some proof? Yeah, exactly. Do it the other way around. And say, hey, I ran an experiment. Here's my experiment. It came out with nothing.
They don't feel that they need to, because in their mind, if you are the claimant, you, it's just the burden of proof is on you. So to them, absence of evidence is evidence of absence. You know, that's how they see it. They don't need to do anything. They don't want to do anything. They're not trying to find out the truth. They just like to taunt you and tell and say, "Oh, there's no proof. Oh, prove it to me. Prove it to me." That's what they do. They don't go out searching for it actively, at least.
Yeah, they'll come and attack people. I mean, they'll attack people like John Edward. I was talking about how a fellow in New Zealand or Australia or somewhere is suing John Edward because of his tour down there, where he's going down there and communicating with the spirits of deceased relatives of people who see the show. There's a fellow suing him, saying that he's doing all cold readings. As a matter of fact, Victor Zammit might even be following that, because he's in Australia, isn't he? So, or New Zealand, so he might be following that particular news story. That hit the news last week.
What does the skeptics think about EVP? That's kind of a proof right there. What are they saying about that?
Yeah, have you heard any what are their arguments about, have you ever heard of electronic voice phenomena?
Yeah, I read some of it on Victor Zammit's website, which you should tell your audience, they don't know. It's victorzammit.com, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Article is on there too, so you can give the link. The link to it. It's www.victorzammit.com /skeptics/winston.html. That's where my essay is now.
Right, and then the overall site is, of course, Victor's website. And he's the anti-skeptic.
Yeah, and Victor Zammit also has a million-dollar challenge to skeptics to try to for them to refute his arguments, which none of them have. And his website is very extensive, and it mostly deals with life after death and survival of consciousness. And there's quite a lot of good articles on there. So it's pretty extensive, and it's something you might want to take a look at sometime. And he's very passionate about what he does too, and he's a former lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Former lawyer, and so he's really good at arguing.
So he's really good at arguing. Oh, definitely. Yeah. And he's very passionate. And that, by the way, is how I found your article. That, by the way, is how I found your article. And on his website, and I'm like, this is why I got to talk to Winston too. That's why we're here. You did a good job on that.
They're not, 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 they're not
it happens. It really does happen. I mean, you just can look at a wood grain pattern. Right.
They don't really test
right.
it. And you'll even see that really investigating something and just it's spreading based on philosophy. You'll even see that with, you know, even see that with Lady Carl Sagan, who wrote that mystical book about the paranormal book and the demon called the Demon Haunted World. People and they've come up, you know, and I've noticed those patterns, and I've noticed those patterns. So I figured, why not point them out? And very few people have done that so far.
Definitely not as extensively. We have to take a break. So hang on through the break. So we'll be right back after a short break and talk more with Thompson Wu about skeptics and their arguments and debunking the arguments of the skeptics.
I like that.
So we'll be back shortly. Everyone, hang on.
News, Ghost Talk Radio Show, visit us on the web at www.floridaghosthunters.com. Our show airs live on Sunday evenings between 9 and 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us.
Ghostly talk sticking our nose in the world's business.
What happened to your journalistic responsibility?
What do you mean journalistic responsibility? I talk about aliens for crying out loud.
Yeah?
What do you think aliens are?
Right, talking about this kind of stuff. Aliens' responsibility is usually holding the truth back. That's trying to bring it back out to people and let them see these things.
There you go.
I think we got one vote on your side, Clyde.
What are you talking about?
Well, you do. A lot of people are on my side, I think.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Ghost hunting. My ethereal anti-drug.
Yeah.
I hear that music.
AC/DC.
Yeah. We must be back from break.
Yeah.
So, we are live. This is, I'm Doug, of course.
And I'm Karma.
And this is Ghostly Talk. We're live on Pioneer Radio from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday night.
Every Sunday. Sometimes
yes.
Thursdays.
And sometimes. Saturdays. And I feel guilty about the Thursdays because there's this fantastic, relatively new show that Pioneer has. On Thursdays, about 9 o'clock at night. You'd have to check the schedule to
and
make
what
sure.
Is it?
It's a Dave, or a Daisy, D-A-Z-E is the name. And she's a hypnotist, a hypnotherapist kind of person. And she's doing a show. It was a popular show, a very popular show up in Alaska. And then she moved to where it's very, very inconvenient for her to do the show, even though it's on the real radio. So she does an internet-only version of the show as well. And it's carried on Thursday nights, you know, about 9 p.m. Eastern time or so. And if you get a chance, go check out her show because it's high-quality stuff. She's an amazing, amazing broadcaster. So with that, there's a lot of people in the chat rooms. A lot of people are talking about what we're talking about. We're talking about skeptics with Winston Wu. There's people in the chat room, a lot of them, for the Pioneer chat room. So if you go to our website, www.ghostlytalk.com, there's a link for IRC chat. Or if you go to pioneer.rolo.net, there's a text chat link. And when we're live, we're in the chat room. We're watching the chat room. So we're there. And there's a lot of folks in there
now. When I'm not talking, I'm reading.
Oh, you can see, yeah, because you're positioned where you can see it.
Oh, yeah.
So
I see what everybody's writing.
If anybody has a question or anything of Winston Wu, let us know because we'll ask Winston. So, Winston, you said you have this opportunity to go to a seance kind of thing. Is that new for you? Had you ever been, like, really wanting to do something like that because of your... Because, obviously, I don't know if you're... I don't think you're a skeptic, but I don't know if you're an actual 100% believer either. So what would be interesting is to know, like, is this something that you had been looking to do?
Well, first of all, I would call myself a skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
Not a closed-minded pseudo-skeptic. I'm more of an open-minded skeptic. Like, I'll look at both sides and consider, you know, each side's points and make a decision based on that. And try to be as objective as possible. I wouldn't call myself, 100% believer either, because I don't believe, you know, everything I hear, and nobody should. I don't believe every single claim out there. But for ghosts, for instance, I do believe that you know, it's the evidence is very strong, and there's a very high probability that it's real, and it's not all in people's heads. That they may not be these spirits. We don't know. They could be something else. They could be fire elementals. They could be something we haven't been able to describe yet or understand. But I don't think it's all in people's heads. That's what I think.
So you're thinking there is some kind of phenomena there.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
And that's pretty remarkable for him not seeing anything.
Yeah. Well,
right.
See, the thing, what's interesting is even, you know, Scott L. is the third co-host of Ghostly Talk. He's the second, actually, but he, because you came on board
I'm
after.
I'm second today.
Yeah, you're second today, but you had come on board officially after Scott.
Yeah.
But Scott L. is, even though we go out ghost hunting, and we go to cemeteries, and we go to reported haunted places, you know, with legends around them where you're supposed to see women carrying babies and who fade off into nothingness or...
Guys banging heads off trees.
Yeah, and where you're supposed to hear things. And we go to these places, and he's never actually had what he would consider a phenomenon happen to him. But he still goes. And I've had two phenomena. Once I saw a shadow person, and then the second thing, I actually saw a ghost. And I really believe I saw a ghost. I know that I saw a ghost. I know I saw a shadow person.
I believe that you.
Yeah, and you believe that I believe that I saw, yes. And the thing is, he's never had that, yet he still goes, which is really, you've got to give him credit.
Yeah, he's very passionate.
You know, so I give you all the credit in the world, Winston, for going and participating in that event.
You're not just sitting on your can typing stuff that you have no idea about.
Yeah, you're doing stuff, and I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I am sort of, you know, a truth seeker who likes to explore and experience things, and
Ooh.
Normally, I mean, yeah, I do seek these opportunities, and, you know, just to see what happened, you know, and then I'll evaluate it afterwards. And I did write a little short report of it, which I can send you sometime. But
we should put that up. We can put that.
That's
on
what people should do. I mean, try to experience it for themselves. You know, it's one thing to just sit there and look at the evidence and just judge it based on that, but it's another to actually try to put yourself in someone else's shoes and who's experienced that and see what it's like, you know. And
part of the hard
thing to talk about a foreign country without ever going there, it's just not as credible if you haven't actually been there for a while.
But I believe what some of those foreign countries exist because some of the people I respect have told me that they exist. So I think they at least exist. But yeah, for me to talk about how you've been abroad just over the past couple of months. You went on several trips, right? And so you can talk from firsthand experience about the Orient and different places like that. I, of course, can't talk from first-hand experience, but I can relay stories. That's all I can do. I have one of the hard things about skeptics is that there's even a little bit of skeptic in me, even though I've seen there's a big skeptic, I guess, in me. I would like to see scientific proof. That's never going to happen, though, is it? Or do you think it could happen?
It could happen. It just depends on you know what you would consider scientific proof. If you're talking about instruments that can detect spirits or ghosts, you know, that may be possible and it may not, because I mean ghosts and ESP or your consciousness, some theorize that they're not exactly a form of energy that you can measure. Some people theorize that at the quantum level it has to do with you know, everything being interconnected at a quantum level, and there being really no separation between things, kind of like a super hologram, kind of like I don't know if you've read the book by Michael Talbot called The Holographic Universe.
I have not read that yet.
Yeah, it's a really, really great book. It's a must-read, and he really has a theory that the universe is a giant hologram, and there's a lot of discoveries from the paranormal, normal, and from quantum physics that points to that. And the thing is, it's sort of like a unified theory, because if it was true, it would explain how things can exist, like ESP, ghosts, and God, and time travel, and all kinds of things. It's a theory that points to you know, how they can exist and all be true at the same time, kind of like an omnijective universe. With many dimensions all cross-layered in the same space, but all vibrating at different frequencies.
Well, it would be good to know that we're not, you know, seeing things or misinterpreting. But one of the hardest things about skeptic arguments is that to an extent, there's certain things that I can see in some arguments that I've heard. For example, there's a very well-known thing, they show it on TV sometimes and things like that, where they recreate a crime scene, right? Or a crime it's scheduled to happen, although most the audience doesn't know it. And this crime happens, like somebody will run through an auditorium of people and steal a person, then run off the stage or something like
that.
They
have to guess or repeat back to what they were wearing or recall. Basically.
Yes, and then people have to rely on their memories of the event. To describe what happened, who they thought it was, or what the person looked like, and what they took. Sometimes people don't get what they actually stole correct.
To see if they're a good observer.
Right, and it's all observation skills. And I can see where, like that one time I saw the ghost, a ghost, it was like for a brief millisecond or something. It was very, very short period of time.
I don't tend to see things like that. You know,
I don't either.
I don't tend to see ghosts or hear voices or anything like that, so And you know, I guess I'm just not attuned to that. So for me to experience something, I mean, would be more very convincing to me, because, you know, some people try to see those things, but they don't. And so, but
Well, I know that I didn't. I know that I saw something. I know I saw a ghost. I'm just. It's just like that. You know, I just really do. And I can even describe what I think I saw. But my own observation skills. You know, when I see something like that, where they do an experiment where a person runs in and snatches a person, runs off the stage, and then everybody has to try and describe what they saw, I'm wondering, what about my own observation skills? Because I'm only human, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that I saw something, and are my observation skills in question too? You know, so could I turn my own skeptical side of myself around on myself? I can't convince myself that I did not see something, because I know I saw something, and I know I saw, I almost, you know.
But you've seen something.
Yeah.
But see, they're asking for detail. You know?
Oh, that's true. I mean, I think that the entire audience,
they
even in that thing, they saw somebody run in, grab something, and run off. Yeah. So they all know something happened right away.
Yeah, like, but for you to describe, like, what that...
Yeah, was he wearing a hat, or was his eyes blue, or whatever? That I probably wouldn't know.
That's proof for you, but for a skeptic, that's not proof. They will see, you know, what you saw as being far more probable that it was a hallucination than something real. And so that dismisses it right there. The probability is much higher that you were hallucinating than that it was real. And that's the end of the story for them.
Well, that's really bizarre, because that's something that I would really get into. Because I would be like, I really don't think I was hallucinating.
No, I'm not on drugs. I know what I've seen.
I wasn't drinking anything but Diet Pepsi. Yeah, I was driving.
Clean. Clear.
Yeah, I was driving, so I had to be attentive of what I was doing. So I'm like, I don't know that I was hallucinating, so I'm pretty sure I wasn't. As a matter of fact, I'm positive I didn't hallucinate that guy.
Yeah.
So, but they would
not just you. There's lots of people that have these experiences, so that, you know, really points to something rather than just hallucination.
But they would say you saw a hallucination, and end of story. There's no art, nothing after that.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know,
I'd have a hard time.
Another subject. Even though I haven't experienced ghosts that much, or other types of paranormal phenomenon, there is one type that I have experienced really strongly a few times, and that's ESP. And I think that's also a pretty common experience when the things the form that I've experienced is when something happens to somebody you care about or somebody you're close to, and that person is far away. Sometimes, you know, you can feel what is happening at the same time, and it later is verified to be true. Like, I've experienced that, like, you know, some parents who have, you know, sons that were killed in wars, for instance, at the time their son was killed, the parents actually could feel it happening, like it just happened, like it just hit them, like a realization, and sometimes it'll check out to be true, and then that type of experience is actually really common. Like, it seems like when you're close to someone, there's a bond between you. And like, for instance, back in 1995, I woke up one morning and knew that an ex-girlfriend at the time had a car accident, and a few hours later she called me and told me about it, that it was true. But the thing is, I woke up knowing that it happened, and it wasn't a fear or an anxiety or a worry. It was a knowing, like it you know, it just happened. And even with couples, they often report that they've experienced things like this. For instance, if your spouse or significant other is being unfaithful, for instance.
I was just going to bring that up, because I'm pretty into
And he's
that.
On the other side of the world, okay, in another country, and he's being unfaithful or infidelity or something like that. And the thing is, even though he's so far away, some people can, actually a lot of people can kind of feel like the energy field between you and that person has been disturbed or severed or cut like a ribbon. You can kind of feel that person has not been faithful to you, even though he's very far away, just from the energy field between you and that person.
Then you
and that really can't be measured by any instruments. That's why there may not be, ever be any scientific proof. It has something to do with us being connected at some level, molecular or quantum level.
Then you call, and he doesn't answer his phone. And then you know. And then when you get a hold of him, you're like, you cheated on me!
Yeah.
It's not just you know, being avoiding you or not answering the phone. It's just you can feel, I mean, that's something on the surface, but the reason you call is because you sort of subconsciously feel that the energy field between you and that person has been disturbed in a way. Have you guys ever experienced
that? Yes, I have.
I've experienced that kind of thing.
With no physical proof at all.
What do skeptics say about that?
Because well, that's not discussed.
Oh, okay.
Not yet.
Not yet.
But if it were, they would say the same thing, that you know, that you were worried about something, and sometimes it comes true and sometimes it's not, and it's your selective memory of which coincidences come true and which don't, and you remember the ones that are meaningful and you forget the ones that didn't come true, and so it's your own selective memory. That's the argument they used against that, is the selective memory argument.
When you started to tell that story, I just knew what you were going to say, that it had to do with, like, the infidelity, because I can relate to that. You just know. I don't know if it's a
similar... That's a very, very common one. Some women or men or, you know, some people know that their partner is unfaithful even with zero physical proof, because they just sense the energy field between them is disturbed and severed, kind of like a cut rope or ribbon. Like their attention is definitely somewhere else, and their energy is being directed somewhere away from you.
That's kind of scary, actually.
Have you experienced that, Scott? Or?
No, Scott's not here, so Doug. Yes, I have experienced that, but mostly what I experience that is the phone call kind of thing. I mostly don't get it on, like, horrible, devastating things, you know, or things that would really... you know, be of importance, but mostly like, oh, so-and-so is, this was before cell phones. Now you know when someone's calling because you're always carrying a cell phone.
Oh, you know who's calling before they call.
Right, that kind of thing. And
the skeptics would just say, oh, you remember when it comes true, but you forget when it doesn't match up.
Right, and that's the closest thing that I've had, is that I used to know, but now, of course, with phone calls or with cell phones and stuff, the rules have completely changed, because it shows you right on the little display, you know, someone's calling.
But before I look at my phone, when it's ringing on the table, I'm like, oh, that's probably so-and-so.
Right, and now what's interesting is there is the skeptic part of me. There is a certain amount of times where they could say, well, if somebody calls you pretty much at the same time every day, then of course you're going to get
pattern.
That. Or if you hadn't heard from them in a while, but you expected to. So you've got these expectations that you're also, that you also subconsciously perhaps, you know, have. But if it's somebody like who hadn't talked to you in a decade, how would you know that they're calling all of a sudden, you know?
That's a good point. That's the point I make too, but.
Yeah, that's the
one. They just see it all as coincidences, and some come true and some don't, and people remember the ones that come true, and that's how they dismiss the whole thing.
Well, I've had several of those, though, so I think I blew the statistics out of the water.
Okay, how would they explain, Winston, I was in a car accident, and that day that I was getting ready for my stepdad's funeral, because we were coming back from it when we got into the accident. And I put on my favorite skirt, and I thought I was just being so silly. I'm like, oh, if I get into an accident, they're going to cut this off, and my skirt's ruined. And then I'm like, I'm just being stupid and silly, thinking crazy things. And then we were driving down the road, and I looked at my mom, and I said, I wonder if anybody's ever died on the way to a funeral. And she said, no, but I've heard of people getting into car accidents. And I said, that's what I thought, kind of like really low, you know. And she's like, what did you say? I'm like, nothing, because I didn't want to freak her out. I didn't know. I just had this really weird feeling that was kind of hanging over me since I had awoken that morning. And when it happened, I was like, sure as shit, I knew it, you know. And my sister had told me that the whole day during the funeral that I kept attempting to say something, like I feel weird or something's different. And then when she would ask me what I was saying, I would be like, what? Huh? Like, I was, like, subconsciously saying it, and I was aware of it.
I've had a similar experience where people next to me have suddenly looked at me and said, what did you say? But yet I didn't say anything. I only thought about saying something. And then the thing is, the first thing that comes to mind is, oh, I must have said something but not realized it. But yet when I ask the person usually, did you audibly hear me say something? They'll usually just say, I don't know if it was audible or not. I just thought you said something.
Like they're reading your mind or...
Yeah, it was like I didn't say anything, but I thought about saying it, and somehow they heard it without me even saying it, and they don't know themselves if they heard it with their ears or in their mind or not. But that's happened quite a bit, quite a few times. But Carmen, you're back to an earlier subject. You said you've also had an experience where a partner was unfaithful, and you felt it even though there was no evidence.
Yes, I have. And then when you ask them about it, they're like, you're crazy, you're nuts. And then you just find out in the end that it was, and it's like...
Yeah, not to dwell into your personal life or anything, but...
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll tell my personal
life. That is a pretty common thing to be able to sense that without any evidence. You know,
I think women are more in tune to it than men. I don't know if that's like a bad statement to make, but women just know.
It's true because... I mean, I would say in general it's true because... The male mind sees things in terms of facts and logic and more concrete, you know, and women pay more attention to their intuition. They trust their intuition more than a man does. And that's why with these skeptics you'll find very few women. They're mostly men, too. And
I wonder if we could get more women scientists who would be interested
in... If you look at
the
women if you look at the people who study astrology or who are interested in it, I'd say probably more than 90% of them are women, not men.
You know, that's true. I mean, I've seen that to be quite a fact, at least in my observations of the astrology field, that, you know, the people who do the horoscopes, the people who even probably read the horoscopes, they seem to be more women talking about that stuff than men.
Yeah.
Because there used to be a show here, a local, you know, real terrestrial radio show, not internet radio show, but so it wasn't accessible throughout the world. But it was here in the Windsor, Detroit market, and this lady did this like highly successful astrology show, and her phone lines were packed constantly. Her name was Leslie Naden. And she or is, I mean, she's still there. She's still here, but she's not doing the show.
Maybe she passed because you did say that.
Yeah, but no, she's very much alive. But she did the show, and it was the phone lines were packed, and I'd say a good 95 to 98% of the callers were females.
Were women, yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. Most of the people who see psychics or go to psychic fairs, or who make appointments with psychics, are women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men are very rarely going to do something like that.
So it's really interesting that that like James Van Prague and John Edward are very prominent male psychics. I wonder if things are going to change.
The guy I went to
in the future. Yeah. Oh, and he was a fellow too. Yeah.
Yes, but he was super.
Yeah.
Yes.
He really did.
He
do
was
the work.
More. He was more feminine.
Oh, okay. So he was in tune.
He was in tune.
With his
very,
feminine side and
yes.
with the world and the ethereal world. Cool.
He wasn't macho man.
Oh, okay. So he wasn't always logical. But see, now I think John Edwards is very macho. I think that,
I've seen him. I think he is.
Although he's a dancer, too. But, you know, I think that he's macho. I think also James Van Prague is very, very manly. You know, the two... Those, have you seen any of those shows, Winston? The crossing over show kind of thing?
John Edwards a few times. James Van Prague, I think I saw him once on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Right.
And they were very convincing, to be honest.
Right, and some of that, though, could be video editing at the same time. I mean, that's a skeptic part of me again, but...
That the show isn't rigged or anything.
Right, but I'm thinking that this... A lot of it, I mean, they did this in front of a live audience, and it there's that's hard work. You know, even if some of it is cold reading and only some of it is, what's nine? 9 minutes?
It's nine.
Oh, it's nine.
It's. I know, I looked up and I'm like, that went by quick.
This is the end of the show.
No.
Oh, Winston, this is the end of the show, and I had, like, so many more things. Well, okay, so, yeah, I see more males now, though, in going into this kind of thing, so and I think that's encouraging.
Yeah.
So. But I just wanted to say that, you know, no psychic, even if he's a real psychic, every psychic is going to get some misses and some hits, and as long as they get a 60% hit ratio, that's considered, you know, a sign of genuine ability. So no psychic, not even John Edwards, if he was real, is
going to
be getting everything right all the time. Because he gets misses, too. And some of his hits can be vague and some can be specific. So it's just, you know, up in the air. But sometimes the hits are just too detailed for it to have been chance. And so
psychic
abilities are not, you know, some tool that you can perfect and use. You know, it's not totally at your control.
Not yet, anyway. I'm hope maybe eventually with practice and enlightenment and stuff like that.
May not be meant to have it at our control, because at our stage of evolution, you know, the universe may decide that we would use it for selfish ends.
And that could happen.
So we're not.
I mean,
worried.
Look at the state of politics. I mean, the universe is smart in that respect. Winston, we have to close the show. This is the end of the show.
Thanks for having me.
I have so much more to ask you and talk to you about, but if possible, I want to get you on sometime this summer, especially if you're out and about doing things and talking to people and you know, collecting stories and experiencing stuff yourself. I'd love to talk with you again with more time.
Okay,
if at all possible. And I'd love to get some of that stuff that you do up on our website. Well, I'll dig into my emails. I'll be more attentive this week. We'll get together because I'd love to get some of your work. Even pointers. I know there's a pointer to your paper on the website right now, and there'll be a pointer there forever. But you know, some other anything that you do is so worthwhile. I have to say, from the entire paranormal community, thank you so much.
Yes, it's good to have someone on our side.
Yes.
And a pleasure to be on.
And thank you.
And I have a feeling that you're going to see a ghost.
I hope so. That would be neat if the next one you go to and there's, an apparition. With that, you guys, I have to close the show. This has been Ghostly Talk. Thank you very much, Winston Wu, for appearing. I am Doug.
And I am Karma.
And we'll see you guys next Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. For 2 hours. Coming up next, W Paranormal on Pioneer Radio.
Science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from the Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.